Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum and to 2018. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this episode, as we begin another new year in these United States of America, it's an opportune time to listen in to the creative voices of descendants of the original inhabitants of these lands. Late last year, Hugo House partnered with Poetry Foundation to host a night of readings by a diverse group of Native poets. The evening was emceed by poet Natalie Diaz and included readings by Celeste Adame, Laura Day, Jennifer Forrester, Cassandra Lopez, Sarah Ortiz, and Cedar Saigo. This Poetry Across the Nation's reading took place on December 7th at Fred Wildlife Refuge. Please note, these recordings contain unedited language of an adult nature. We're presenting a selection of readings here. To listen to each poet's full reading, go to our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Here, Hugo House Executive Director Tree Swenson introduces the event.
Hugo House is just delighted to be working with the Poetry Foundation. This is a great national organization that's based in Chicago. And if you're in Chicago, you must visit their stunning home. It's a great place for poetry. They have a fantastic library, reading rooms. Poetry Foundation does very important work across the nation, raising the profile of poetry and really making it a more visible and important part of our culture. So I'm grateful to them. We're thrilled to be working with them. They do many, many things. And this particular Poetry Foundation series, Poetry Across the Nations, aims to strengthen intercultural and intertribal interactions, which is an enormously important goal that everyone at Hugo House applauds and supports in any way we possibly can. So we're delighted to have Natalie Diaz here at Hugo House again. It's sort of like old home week with her and Laura Day here, a former Made at Hugo House fellow, and Cedar Saigo, who is from this region originally and is now back living here, as well as our other readers who we are all so lucky to be able to hear tonight thanks to this partnership. Plus, some of the readers are published by presses that are in this region, Wave Books, great local publisher, Copper Canyon Press over in Port Townsend. So thanks so much also to our valued partner, Open Books, Seattle's great poetry-only bookstore. Yay. And finally, I'd like to thank Fred Wildlife Refuge, which has provided a... Yay, this place is fantastic. And they've provided a most welcome home for many Hugo House events during our time in our interim facility next to the Fry Art Museum. We are scheduled to move back to our brand new home on the original site near Cal Anderson Park by June. And now I would like to introduce Idami Noriega, who is the manager of the President's Initiatives and Board Relations at Poetry Foundation and who is making this incredible evening possible. Thank you so much, Idami.
Good evening, and thank you all for being here. It's a packed house, and that's so exciting. So I want to thank Tree, and your whole team at Hugo House. You have been fantastic partners of the foundation for this program, but also for many, many years, so thank you for that. And of course, this program, Poetry Across the Nations, would not be possible without all of the work that Natalie Diaz and Jennifer Forrester have done. So thank you both for getting us here today. And thank you to our readers. We're in for just a really fantastic night of poets sharing their poems with us. So before we get started, I want to say a little bit about Poetry Across the Nation and what brought it about. And it's something that's been in my mind for a long time. It's something that Natalie and I have talked about for many, many, many months. And it was this idea of fostering spaces across the country where Native poets could talk to each other, could talk talk to local poets, could have conversations, like Tree said, between generations and across nations. So I'm thrilled that this is our kickoff event. I'm thrilled that it's happening in Seattle. I'm thrilled that Cedar kicked us off yesterday with some workshops at the Suquamish Nation. So thank you so much. And I'm just excited that Hugo House has been our partner in the kickoff event. So without further ado, I will introduce our first reader tonight, who is Natalie Diaz. Natalie Diaz was born and raised in the Fort Mojave Indian Village in Needles, California, on the banks of the Colorado River. She is Mojave and an enrolled member of the Gila River Indian Tribe. Her first poetry collection, When My Brother Was an Aztec, was published by Copper Canyon Press. She is a Lannan Literary Fellow and a Native Arts Council Foundation Artists Fellow. She was awarded a Bretlow Fellowship, the Holmes National Poetry Prize, a Hodder Fellowship, and a Penn Civitella Ranieri Foundation Residency, as well as being awarded a U.S. Artist Ford Fellowship. Diaz teaches at Arizona State University Creative Writing MFA program. She splits her time between the East Coast and the Mojave Valley in Arizona, where she works to revitalize the Mojave language. So thank you all so much. Here's Natalie.
I want Jahotan, Kivakadum, Hakuloi, Maj, Michtanam. Vikwame Yuntik. Bienvenidos a todo. First, I think we wanted to make sure that we acknowledged the land that we were on tonight. Some of you might think I mean your houses, but I actually don't mean that land. I meant the land that's beneath your homes and in this place where you've made your home. So the Coast Salish land, Duwamish. And with us here tonight, we also have Celeste, who's from Muckleshoot, of course, Cedar from Suquamish, and there may be others of you here, but we wanted to make sure that we acknowledged the land that we're on, so that's really important. I'm gonna read a few poems, and then I'm gonna turn into your MC. First, I wanna make sure that I just wanted to get the thank yous out first. And Tree, thank you so much for always just being a place where we can come. I knew immediately, like, who can we call about this? And it's like, call Tree. She will help you make something happen. And also Idalme, just for being willing to, like, say, yeah, what if? What if we did this? You know, why not? Let's see if we can make it happen. And Jennifer, who's always my partner in crime lately. We're always getting ourselves into small knots and tangles of things that turn out to be very beautiful and wonderful. Open Books, thank you for coming out and selling books for us. And then, of course, our beautiful, powerful readers. I think I speak for a lot of us when it's our luck to be here with you in this place with your poetry. American arithmetic. Native Americans make up less than 1% of the population of America, 0.8% of 100%. Oh, mine efficient country. I do not remember the days before America. I do not remember the days when we were all here. Police kill Native Americans more than any other race. Race is a funny word. Race implies someone will win, implies I have as good a chance of winning as who wins the race, which isn't a race. Native Americans make up 1.9% of all police killings, higher than any race, and we exist as 0.8% of all Americans. Sometimes race means run. I'm not good at math. Can you blame me? I've had an American education. We are Americans and we are less than 1% of Americans. We do a better job of dying by police than we do existing. When we are dying, who should we call? The police or our senator? Please, someone, call my mother. At the National Museum of the American Indian, 68% of the collection is from the United States. I am doing my best to not become a museum of myself. I am doing my best to breathe in and out. I am begging. Let me be lonely, but not invisible. But in an American city of 100 people, I am Native American, less than one, less than whole. I am less than myself, only a fraction of a body. Let's say I am only a hand. And when I slip it beneath the shirt of my lover, I disappear completely. You don't have to clap. We prefer drums, actually. Yeah. Like church. My woman comes to me like darkness, long and through my open window, mullion, transom. A good window lets the outside participate. I keep time on the hematite clocks of her shoulders. I've done so much of it. Time. Her right hip bone, a searchlight sweeping me, finds me. I have only ever escaped through her body. What if we stopped saying whiteness so it meant anything? For example, if you mean milk of magnesia, say milk of magnesia, or salt, or they've hurt another one of us, or the way the moon is a smoke atop the dirty water, or the pearline damp she laces up my throat, my face, mi caracol. They think brown people fuck better when we are sad, like horses or coyotes, all hoof or howl, all mouth clamped down in the hair on the neck and asses in the air. You ask, who is they, even though you know. You want me to name names. Shoot. We're named after them. You think my creator had ever heard of the word Natalie? Huh. When he first made me, he called me Snake. Then promised the afterlife would be reversed. South turned north, thick with watermelons. But it's hard, isn't it, not to perform what they say about our sadness when we are always so sad? It is real work to not perform a fable. Just ask the turtle, ask the hare. Remind yourself and your friends, sometimes I feel fast, sometimes I am so slow, sometimes I get put down in the street, always I win the wound they hang on my chest. Remind yourself, your friends, they are only light because we are dark. If we didn't exist, it wouldn't be long before they had to invent us, like the light switch. But our creator says, kingdom and we come. Remind our friends, we fuck like we church, best, and full of God and joy and sins and sweet upside down cake. And when they ask me what's in your love's eyes, I tell them, wild watermelons, green on green striped. She and I, we eat the watermelon, and now she is my eye. Our first reader is Celeste Adame, Muckleshoot. Also an incredible poet and person and friend. She holds a Master of Fine Arts in Poetry from the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Her thesis, Lover's Landscape, explores gender identity, sexuality, love, basketball, landscapes of both Washington and New Mexico. She has been published in Yellow Medicine Review, As Us, a journal for women of the world, Hinchas de Poesía, Connotation Press, and Santa Fe Literary Review. She was also one of the poetry editors for the first two editions of Mud City, the online literary review of the Institute of American Indian Arts Low Residency MFA program. Please welcome Celeste Adame.
I have this thing when I'm writing poems. I like to draw boxes. And you'll see that I like to keep my poems in boxes, which is an interesting thing for me because before I went to IA, I didn't know anything about Cesoras or any of that other stuff. This one's called Ars Poetica. Words filtered through water, an instance of you slipping from bedsheets, unwrapped, a present for me to fill out as we are, your head on my shoulder. Rocks become ocean shoelace as they leave my hands. Stars paint constellations of tomorrow on ceilings made of chalkboards painted royal purple, drip into red. Seek out paintbrushes, remove handle, use fingers, paint, sunlight outside window, raindrops explode from sky. Follow fourth star to find trail of discarded dresses disguised as poems, maybe marbled ashes, maybe supernova. And that's actually one of the very few poems that I've written since I left the MFA program. I promise I'll get back to work on that eventually. This one's called Shots Missed. As Natalie said, my thesis has a lot about basketball and gender identity and stuff like that. And for people who don't know me, I've got six kids at home, well, like 10, 12, maybe 12 sometimes. And a lot of them call me dad, even though I'm a woman, so. Shots missed. The nets have stopped swaying from all the shots we missed, all the games we never finished. It all comes back to me, staring at the backboard of my childhood court. If the hook shot that I taught her did not shut the crowd up before hitting glass, dropping in without touching the rim, if I didn't remember, none of us wanted to defend the Pendleton guard. She had a smile on her face and it made us feel uncomfortable. I learned the coach wasn't lying when she said, it is all in the wrist. The feeling, I figured out how to spin the ball, maneuver it behind my back while dribbling between my legs, dancing with you in the game, on the court. It was the only time we could touch in public. Had I never picked up a basketball, didn't learn the curves of her body were made for my hands, a poor dribble gets the ball stolen, and I am taking the last second jumper.
Our next reader is Laura Day. She's a poet and teacher. A lifetime resident of the Pacific Northwest, Day studied creative writing at the University of Washington and the Institute of American Indian Arts. She is Eastern Shawnee. Her first book, Tributaries, won a 2016 American Book Award. In 2015, Day was a Made at Hugo House Fellow, so she's coming back, as Tree said, and a Jack Straw Fellow. And your second book is coming up. What is the name of your...
My second book is called Instruments of the True Measure, Beyond the Fall.
Yeah, Instruments of the True Measure. I'm waiting for it, so I luckily somehow managed to get a galley of it. So I'm excited about it. It's a beautiful book, so make sure you keep your eyes out for that. Day lives near Seattle with her husband and one of the cutest sons I've ever seen in my life. So welcome, Laura Day.
Thank you, Natalie, and thanks to my fellow readers tonight. I want to give a particular thank you to the Hugo House and the Poetry Foundation. Some of the poems I'll be reading tonight I actually wrote as a Hugo House fellow, so I appreciate being able to come read them tonight in this great company. Also, thanks everyone in the audience for spending your evening with us. We appreciate it. I'm going to read some of my new work tonight. And a lot of these poems are focused on the surveying and mapping of the American West. So some of the poems follow these two figures as they grapple with these consequences of measurement. Nationhood. I'm a citizen of two nations, Shawnee and American. I have one son who is a citizen of three. Before he was born, I learned that like all infants, he would need to experience a change of heart at birth in order to survive. When a baby successfully breathes in through the lungs, the heart changes from parallel flow to serial flow, and the shunt between the right and left atriums closes. Our new bodies obliterate old frontiers. North America is mistakenly called nascent. The Shawnee Nation is mistakenly called moribund. America established a mathematical beginning point in 1785 in what was then called the Northwest Territory. Before that, it was known in many languages as the Eastern Range of the Shawnee, Miami, and Huron homelands. I do not have the Shawnee words to describe this place. The notation that is available to me is 40 degrees, 38 minutes, 32.61 seconds north, 80 degrees, 31 minutes, 9.76 seconds west. Leviathan. In Westport, the small French cart of the voyageurs earned the name Mule Killer. Once, Shawnee was the lingua franca up and down the Mississippi. Then Molassy became molasses. For the bringing of the horse, it is said much can be forgiven. Burn of Missouri whiskey and aching molars, lunatic fevers of cholera. Even those men, born astride, rare beast to share that weight on such fine and slender legs. Auction of the bonded, perched on Kentucky's ragged edge, crescents grown handsome, dark hair, spit bug green eyes, an ache in wrist and eye teeth, no axe swinging can slake. Sowing a taste for leaving, the whistling hiss of his scythe severing his father's sparse crop turns him inside out, a pocket that aches to be filled. Calico and honey sell slow on the frontier. 16th harvest skin, not his own, but a waltz partner jerking him roughly across the boards. Father and older brothers turn their minds to a new trade. Cash bounties, backroom scalps, wolves and panthers. After November's auction of the indentured poor, Crescent signs papers with a surveyor up the National Road. On the river ride home, he fixes his eyes high. Palisades of bird's eye limestone stacked like dusty bolts of hazelnut homespun on a shelf. He walks off, wearing new boots for the first time in his life, shocked at their chafing straightness. Strange to bend a hard thing with his body's will and not the other way around. They wear his flesh to blood and pus before he's crossed into Ohio just the same.
How many indigenous people are here tonight? All right, we're going to own Seattle by the end of the night. how many writers are here tonight? Poets? Yeah. Well, so it feels good to be here, you know, also because I think a lot of times, like, our indigenous poets are not, they're left out in some ways of the community, but they're such an integral part of the language here, the stories here, and the poetry here. So this feels like a really special night, and being, you know, that Tree and Hugo House of and Idalmi and Poetry Foundation and all of these writers have kind of helped usher this together. So, you know, we know this is going to be the beginning of many interactions and kind of a much larger now poetry family. Our next reader is Jennifer Elise Forrester, who's helped me through the last few years in many ways, many text messages and phone calls, and knowing Jennifer and her work have made my days better. She's alumna of the Institute of American Indian Arts, or IAIA. You've heard us say that a lot. How many of the group of readers have been through IA? So three, yeah, four. Sasha's here too, Tia, yeah, so. Received her MFA from the Vermont College of the Fine Arts and is completing a PhD at the University of Denver. She is a recipient of the 2017 NEA Creative Writing Fellowship, a Lannan Foundation Writing Residency Fellowship, and was a Wallace Stegner Fellow in Poetry at Stanford. A member of the Muscogee Creek Nation of Oklahoma, she is the author of two books of poetry, Leaving Tulsa and Bright Raft in the Afterweather. She co-directs an arts mentorship program for Muskogee youth and teaches at the MFA Low Residency Program. Please welcome Jennifer Elise Forster.
Hello. Dive right in. Natalie has also made my days much better. Thank you. Descent. I have drunk the night's perfumes, poured tea, batched leaves of the sea's decay, tumbleweed, choke cherry, skeleton leaf. To ascend, I read, you must first descend. Go out a different way than the way you came in. Dawn comes, a lambent orb hovers above the plains. A woman, robed in red-stitched silk, flames at the railroad trestle. Spanish dagger, flat-lined horizon. Black Angus grazing in creosote. Wind whips dust into a slender column, pirouetting over parched fields. No song for the snakes in the dun-colored grass. No doves, no Lucifer hummingbirds. Clouds noctilucent, portend tornadoes. Antelope cram into gabled chambers. I rattle through pink ocotillos. Siphon the sand from my throat. At the crack in the road where sky bleeds through, I wrap myself in thunder's rolling cloak and dive. Huktalwa is in Muskogee a term for an elderly woman. This is called Huktalwa's Crow. There were still songbirds then nesting in hackberry trees and a butterfly named Question. I remember ivy trembling at the vanishing point of your throat. Then the timelines crashed. California split into an archipelago, orchards withered under blooms of ash. Now there is no nectar, no rotten fruit. The air is quiet. Once in Russia, ornithologists trapped a population of hooded crows, transported them 500 miles westward. Winter came. They never caught up with their flock. With crusts of calcified algae, we catalog each day lost. Hot thermals, cirrus vaults, fistfuls of warblers hurtling into dark. There was no sound to the forgetting. We knew the heart would implode before the breath and lungs collapsed. That the world would end in snow, an old woman walking alone, empty bird cage strapped to her back.
Our first reader of the second half is Cassandra Lopez. She is California Indian, Kawiya, Tongva, and Luiseño, and Chicana writer who received support from Canto Mundo, Breadloaf, and Jack Straw. She's been selected for residencies with the School of Advanced Research and Hedgebrook. Her chapbook, Where Bullet Breaks, was published by the Sequoia National Research Center, and her second chapbook, After Bullet, is forthcoming from Paper Nautilus. She's a founding editor of As Us, a space for writers of the world, and teaches at Northwest Indian College. Please welcome Cassandra Lopez.
I'm really happy to be here and happy to be reading with all of you guys. This first poem is called Open the Door, I Witness. Ear, mouth, and hands become witness. I'm all instinct, arms and legs propelling on their own, shutting door. There is a ringing inside me. Bullets, rapid breath, a thick wave I must escape. Brother's mouth gurgles. I touch his flutter lips, his face still penny warm. There is a buzz of black. Do you hear me? Brother, is this what it sounds like for you? Where are my screams? I speak in a neighbor language. Father's fingers are fish, drowning. They cannot dial a phone. Instead, father searches for shotgun. In his house, a siren's mouth, a blue, red, and white light. The howls break the buzz. Your baby's mother is wailing. She leans on a chair, the wall, her bones melting. She is letting herself slip into the current. There is a wetness here, all the rain. Cop bends to brother, slaps his face, and asks, who did this to you? We must fill the bathtub with questions. Let it run, spill out over the edges, into the ocean. Bird of paradise murmurs, my throat crackles nonsense. So many questions. Even when night comes, again, we must open the door. I don't always remember, but my body does. My pin-pricked follicles soldier up. Throat locks, the hurricane I push down. Legs want to run from an invisible bullet drone. Shh. In my dreams, there are always doors. In my dreams, they come. And I clip through the wild waters, mapping the world. Know each exit, which windows break, where we break. Still, bullet catches us cold. I want to be a thick-shelled mollusk, clam up tight. Is that brother? His lumpy neck? I think his voice is caught in the veins of the orange trees. Every day I open that door and think I am living someone else's life. These are two old ones, or the first is an older one and this one as well. I call this my greatest hits because it was published online on Indian Country today. And so when everybody giggles me, this is the one they get. A new language. My words are always collapsing upon themselves, too tight in my mouth. I want a new language, one with at least 50 words for grief and 50 words for love, so I can offer them to the living who mourn the dead. I want a language that understands sister pain and heart hurt. So when I tell you, brother, was my hook of heart, you will see the needle threading me to the others, numbered men, women, and children of our grit-spit city. I want a language to tell you about 2010's 37th homicide, the unsolved, a man that my city turned to number, sparking me back to longer days when ocean is the mouth of summer. Our shell fingers drive into sand, searching, we find tiny silver sand crabs. We scoop and scoop till we bore and go in search of tangy seaweed. We are salted sun, how we brown to earth, our warm flesh flowering in this new language, our bones say sun and sea, reminding us of an old language our mouths have forgotten, but our marrow remembers.
Our next reader is Sarah Marie Ortiz. Pueblo of Acoma. Graduated from the Institute of American Indian Arts and Antioch University Los Angeles's MFA program with a focus in creative nonfiction. She has formally studied law, indigenous education, global self-determination in indigenous communities, radio, theater, and film. She has been presenting her creative work nationally and internationally for over 15 years and has published work in the Kenyon Review, Plowshares, Sentence, and Fulcrum. She is the author of Red Milk and is currently at work on her second collection, Savage, A Love Story. She lives in Burien, Washington. Please welcome Sarah Marie Ortiz.
I'm going to start with a piece that somewhat incantatory. I wrote it when I was just a baby writer at IAIA, 18 years of age, super fucking scared, the mother of a little girl. I gave birth to her at 14, and I started in tribal college, pretty much right out of high school, and just not knowing what was going to happen, not knowing if anybody would publish me or support me in my academic journey. And I share that every day with the students that I work with, and that's an honor just because I think I need to be as honest with them as possible about, you know, the journey to higher education and whatever you study, the arts or science or whatever it is. It's a meandering journey for sure, and there are lots of wolves and potholes, and mine definitely was. So it's not lost on me that I'm even standing here today, because especially growing up in New Mexico, there was a target on my forehead. So to write, to love, to fight in the way that I have, again, it wasn't guaranteed. And a lot of the writing speaks of a loss, a personal and a collective loss, and a lot of pain. And so I'm not necessarily the funnest poet in that way, but what I write is true, so know that. This piece is called Ceremony. Way-ya-hey-ya-hey-ya, way-ya-hey-ya-hey, way-ya-hey-ya-hey-ya, way-ya-hey-ya-hey. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth open their eyes to greet her. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth open their arms to embrace her. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth open their mouths to sing for her. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth take knives to their skin to bleed for her. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth take shovels to their eyes and plant seeds for her. Morning has come, and the brown children of the earth cover their heads with red paint and build fires with the bodies of their brothers, for the night will soon be here. Way-ya-hey-ya-hey-ya, way-ya-hey-ya-hey, way-ya-hey-ya-hey-ya, way-ya-hey-ya-hey. This piece was published, it has been published in a couple different places, but instead of reading the piece that's actually published in here, Judy Wilson, she actually asked us to basically just send along some language about why we write, and this is what I wrote. I write in order to reorder and reillumine my indigenous present, past, and possible future. Nothing makes sense to me until I write it. This being a process of both putting text to page and ordering the song lyric language in my brain too. It doesn't always make sense after I write it, but that's okay too. I write in order to cauterize things in my heart and mind. Story does this. It burns apart and mends at the same time, I think. I think there's ultimate good and ubiquitous, though not always pleasant, healing present in this process. But one must be very careful when enduring it and bearing witness. It's easy to miss the best parts. I write in order to sing a new song of 21st century indigeneity, indigenous personhood, nationhood, love, loss, and life. We've had our poets, orators, music makers, politicians, and mad men and mad women who survived and sung, rendered our lives through time, but they've never sung it quite like this. I might get the tune all wrong. That's okay. Dying, laughing a bit, and planting a little garden in the trying, hands all caked with earth. It will have been worth it.
Our last reader is Cedar Saigo. I feel like we should all say welcome home also. Was raised on the Suquamish Reservation in the Pacific Northwest and studied at the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at the Naropa Institute. He is the editor of There You Are, Interviews, Journals, and Ephemera on Joan Kiger, and author of 8 books and pamphlets of poetry, including Royals, Language Arts, Stranger in Town, Expensive Magic, and 2 editions of Selected Writings. Please welcome Cedar Saigo.
Thank you. Thank you. I just want to say thanks to all the organizers of this event and to my fellow poets. Thank you so much. I thought I would start with some new work tonight. Natalie mentioned this book I just finished editing called There You Are, and it's interviews and unpublished journals and ephemera of Joan Kiger. And we were at the first proof, and she suddenly passed away March 22nd of this year. And I wrote this while she was still living on what turned out to be her 82nd birthday. So I'd like to start with that. It's called November 19th, 2016, for Joan Kiger. 1. Poetry is the part that no one sees. Clip the flower, burn the brush, watch rain stream down the moon viewing window. 6 drops fold together, then glimmer. Burn a stick of autumn leaves, crack the screen door, write longer. Have beams shooting out and over the blessed, bountiful body. Do not revisit poems the next day. They have already rejoined the actual matter. Daily music fallen back into the fabric. To acknowledge mastery would violate her flexibility, even further terms, the heat and shape of the mountain. 2. Bring the outside in, the gray continuous tangle of moss posing as a mandala, burning the sudden white, tiny cracks in between, outside. The studio. Coyotes on a torn paper hilltop howling at the sun, a blaring red stamp. A circular pond with animals feeding in droves around it. Brown, pink, yellow cheetah. Bare trees full of lime-colored birds. A wooden ladder that swings down off its hinge. A huge room without bolts or nails, full of ghosts of friends, makers of poems. Turquoise and black at battle in square shapes and ends of blades interlocked off-screen. reams of paper in boxes, perfect blank, next to ladders leading out the roof. Rodin's sink crusted over with plaster, dry wrinkled hands resting on threshold. Seafoam green door, withered markings, golden deadbolt, depression glass tomb. Spilled green wine teased into gargoyle, his eyes are seething, his ears are burning. And this is a translation I made from Sappho. More than a hero, well, a god in mine eye, the man that is given a seat beside you, who follows closely the buildup in your voice, how it crashes. The laughter drawn in to stir my heart, we cross paths and my tongue is useless, a burn that rises to the surface. Revelations fallen on dead masses. I am haunted with my own changes and racing to transcribe. Sweating out involuntary seizures, I am like dead grasses, yellow, turned aside, stiff as a corpse. And this is called Arsenal 4. Cinders in clotted smoke, stone of the war and its gleaming, battle plans reduced to perfection, the floors reappear in silent symphonic gestures, a folded paper calico window hung with tiger skins, knocking twice at night, Jerusalem red lamps worn more as a garland than her smear turning trampled door, breaking the fall. Scribbles under square jars, giants in long fits, in hieroglyphics. The painters weaned on bent reed pens, drilled holes, blood ink of gorgons, violet sample of the sirens, hooked in delay, over and underwater, approaches replete, faint, bluish gray. And I guess I'll read a couple from this new thing. Let's see. Which actually feels kind of old already. This is called Handbook of Poetic Forms. I use acrostics to get laid, then pulp to pay my rent, and ballads to buy off the Christians, sonnets to learn counterfeit, chant to reverse dark circles. Cantos trigger insanity and worse. Terza rima when I feel like swimming laps. Odes for luck in blackjack. Index for sedative. A prayer to form searchlights. Haiku to throw a shadow and tear it in half. A diary to become more gay. Pantoums to pace the cave paintings. Limerick to lock a private room, blues to light my face in a fedora, rap to have my postures blown out, lyric to form my shaving mirror, sestinas to map my double life. The wigwam. I join each frame by hand and smooth them myself. Some mornings I have to stop short. If I can't run a comb through my hair, I'm no good to anyone except for the poets. Dipping into plans for clear portals, a breath between worlds. I will only know revolution in real life, where plans laid are still kept. A big reveal in store as I shift the reading onto legs, drop my collarbone out front. It's a long-range barrel, particular to hours of tinkering. My morning shed is kept warm, despite when having left. I can draw a cloth over its roof with the inside pulley. The fog turns to white, faking jade determinants. Blown clouds, a fat razor wet on its side, forms a helmet in its filthy, stealth manner of light. contented to carve onto whose dressing screen, soon junked, later resurfaced as a delicate carriage house of an uncollected. That was my grandma's favorite bar, the Wigwam. She was Tulalip.
Thanks for streaming this episode of Speakers Forum from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. This Poetry Across the Nation's reading took place on December 7th, 2017 at Fred Wildlife Refuge. To listen to each poet's full reading, go to our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Tune in again soon.